We lost our first world championships really badly in kind of a demoralizing way, where we were winning the first 7/8 of the race. You know, here the race is 6 minutes long, it's 2,000 meters. For the first more than a mile of it, you're winning. And then in the last 45 seconds, three countries pass you and you end up missing second place by it. Can't even fit it in the window, a matter of feet. Well, we turned around the very next year and our coach sat us down, and these were two pieces of pivotal advice that changed everything. And they are the two most important things that I tell you. And he said, the first thing we did was we watched the previous Olympic race where this country, Romania, had won this particular event that we were competing in for three straight Olympic games and almost with the same people, so decades of experience. And we just watched it. He told us to watch it in silence. Just think, just watch, don't speak. And after it, he said, you know, when it comes to the Olympics, you have to be good enough to win to come away with a medal at all.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
Imagine you're feeling kind of out of sorts and you don't know what's next. You've let yourself get out of shape. You've kind of lost your direction. That was Lindsay Dare Shoup. And 8 years later, she was taking home gold at the Olympics on the U.S. rowing team. Today, we hear how she made that transformation and all the things she learned in the process that make up her book, Better Great Than Ever.
Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. Spartan Up listeners can save 10% on their first month by going to betterhelp.com/Spartan.
Here we are for Spartan Up Podcast. Joe DeSena here, founder and CEO, and I've got an Olympian, Lindsay Shoup. But you weren't always an Olympian. I guess a lot of people that become Olympians were not always Olympians, but you have a really unique story. You were out of sport, I heard. You didn't even feel like you were like competitive, and then somehow you got off the couch and just made it happen.
I didn't think I was good enough to play a sport after high school, so I quit sports and spent about 2.5 years kind of wandering aimlessly without them, gaining weight, you know, grades dropping, kind of socially withdrawing. And then through a random kind of chance moment, bumped into the head rowing coach when I was in college. And that's kind of in that day, on that moment, the timing was right. And it was like this, the question came, the opportunity arose right when I needed it.
I do all these podcasts. We read all these books, these self-help gurus we talk to. And, you know, you've got to be ready for the opportunity. You got to be working all the time. You've got to be in shape, but it sounds like you weren't.
I was so far out of shape that, and a kind of a, I'll say older gentleman, who was speed walking. I tried to run a 5K with a friend of mine when I was in college. Tried. I don't like to use the word tried anymore, but because I did, how fast it was is what it was, you know, but this man walked faster than I ran. He passed me going up a hill. That's how out of shape I was when I finally decided to pick up the sport that I ultimately went to the Olympics in. And opportunity, you don't have to be necessarily in shape, but for me, it was because I was on this path that was not right for me. All of these kind of things were going wrong. Yes, I could have gone even farther down that path, but it was just like, oh, I don't want to be doing this anymore. And here's a chance to change that. And yeah, I mean, it's not like on day one, I thought, oh, I'm gonna go to the Olympics in this sport. This is that shot. No, it was, let's explore this because it'll help me be a little bit better than what I'm currently doing.
So you got to be mindful as a human being, right? We've got to make sure we recognize if we don't like where we are, we've got to be willing to change.
Yeah. And I always tell people that, you know, part of figuring out what you want to do and where you want to go and who you want to be is figuring out what you don't want to do. You know, as a coach, I say the same thing. You know, you learn from coaches that had a really positive impact on you, but you also learn from coaches, you learn what not to do sometimes from, you know, other people that you're observing. So I carry that with me to this day in everything I do.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to take more stuff off your plate. That's the hardest thing to do, right? Say yeah. No to things.
Yeah.
Things you don't want to do. It's easy to say yes. So tell me about this Olympic run. You know, I've been pushing this idea of will it make the boat go faster? You know, that story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything you do every single day, getting my boat faster. But you literally were in the fastest boat in the water. Yeah. Tell us about that journey.
Gosh. It's funny going back now because I do so much coaching now to read all these books about what really separates great coaches out and great athletes out. And for me, you know, rowing really was this opportunity to pursue mastery. It wasn't, you know, like I said a minute ago, that the idea that I hopped on board for rowing to win the Olympic Games and that my teammates hopped on board for this to win the Olympic Games. I mean, the first world championships that I was able to make, the first senior team that I made, I kind of laugh about it now. I made it all the way there eating granola bars and toast. You know, cereal was my favorite food at the time. I didn't have all this advice. But we lost our first world championships really badly in kind of a demoralizing way, where we were winning the first 7/8 of the race. You know, here the race is 6 minutes long. It's 2,000 meters. For the first more than a mile of it, you're winning. And then in the last 45 seconds, three countries pass you and you end up missing second place by it. Can't even fit it in the window, a matter of feet. Well, we turned around the very next year and our coach sat us down. And these were two pieces of pivotal advice that changed everything. And they are the two most important things that I tell you. And he said, the first thing we did was we watched the previous Olympic race where this country, Romania, had won this particular event that we were competing in for three straight Olympic Games and almost with the same people. So decades of experience. And we just watched it. He told us to watch it in silence. Just think, just watch, don't speak. And after it, he said, you know, when it comes to the Olympics, you have to be good enough to win, to come away with a medal at all. You know, and now having gone to the games, I completely understand that. And he said, obviously, we're not there yet. Two things. Preparation is confidence. You need to learn to control what you can control and ignore the rest of it. Because when you can take these small steps and manage the tiny little things, because it's more than just height and weight and erg score and that sort of thing, physical strength in the weight room that makes the boat go faster. It's, could I maybe have slept 20 minutes more yesterday? Could I have been a little more hydrated? Could I have done some deep breathing so that I wasn't so nervous? You know, all these teeny tiny features that and factors that actions that we can control that allow us to be stronger to manage the physical and the mental challenges that'll come our way, you know. And once we started there as inexperienced novices, to be honest, relatively speaking, you know, we went from demoralizing loss to setting the world record 1 year later. We broke the world record, won the world championships, and that was the first of 11 straight years of the United States Women's Eight winning this event. 11 straight years of world championship and Olympic wins because we said, okay, preparation is confidence, control what you can, ignore what you can't.
That's awesome. Yeah. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking my boys wrestle, my girls play soccer. And it's all the little things. The little things add up, right? The staying hydrated, maybe in wrestling, wearing knee pads so that you don't get injured in practice. All these little things. And 11 years kind of proves the point. Because what else could it have been, right? It was a one-year turnaround.
Yeah, and it really was, and to go back to that idea of pursuing mastery, you know, how can I be a little better today? And the way that we trained, we went from kind of not really knowing how fast we were. I'm not saying it was completely subjective and, I mean, I guess I'm better today. No, we had markers as well, but our markers didn't become, oh, what did that team do last year? Or what? I wonder what they're doing. It's, let's train on world record speeds that were faster than world record speeds, because then we aren't training against anyone else. We were literally training to become the standard, to set a completely new standard. And as long as we trained in a very methodical way toward that, in a way that was an appropriate step, you know, where the steps weren't too big at once. And that was an important piece for our coach to recognize too, and for ourselves. Whenever the challenge, they were incremental on purpose, because then we could manage them. We would train a particular way. We would know if we were progressing toward that percentage, toward that world record, better than world record speed. And then we would take time to recover. It was very intentionally built where we would have an easy, medium, hard, and then tons of rest. Every week was like that. And then every month we had a big, you know, you knew that there was this very intentional cycle built in. And, you know, even going back, because I tracked everything, you could literally, I mean, I wrote the book built out of all my training logs and journals, but you can go back and see these patterns that when I, in life outside of sport, started to think, because this is the danger of the Olympics. You win the Olympics, you say to yourself, oh, if I can do that, I can do anything. That gets you in trouble in life outside of sport. But what I realized was, if I said that, then I needed to apply the same principle. I can't expect it all at once. I need to control the controllable elements, and I need to be willing to challenge myself in an appropriate amount at a time, you know, make them like manageable chunks, and then be like, all right, I got that, recover, rest, do everything I can, and then build up again.
How many years from the couch, we'll call that moment when you stumbled upon rowing, from the couch to the sit down where the coach said, here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. How many years of training did you have in between that, the couch and that point?
You're talking about when we sat down for the time building up to my second world championships. Within 3 years of being, by national standards, overweight, the worst grades of my life, totally lost and not sure. I mean, I woke up, this is kind of the eerily serendipitous thing. I woke up in the middle of the night before I bumped into my college rowing coach, and I was keeping a journal at the time, and I literally wrote, I wish a thing or two were different. I wish I were not a lazy bum. The world will never know, and that includes me. And the very next day, that is when I had that stumbling upon rowing moment. And within 3 years of that, I was one of the fastest rowers in the country on my way to Japan for my first World Rowing Championships. Within 4 years of that, became a world record setting world champion with my teammates. That is why, you know, when people, they're like, you really believe this stuff? I'm like, yeah.
Were there any signs, though, prior to writing that in the journal, let's call that your low point, were there signs at a younger age that you were a super athlete?
I played probably a dozen sports growing up, so I didn't specialize. You know, let's throw that concept out of the window. But I had an older brother, and I've often wondered, I wonder how many Olympic athletes or high-level athletes in their sport were the younger sibling. You know, you're constantly playing this keep up with the older sibling, or in my case, not only the older sibling, but a bunch of boys. I grew up with a bunch of boys. No one that lived near us, no one in our immediate kind of family friends had girls my age. So I was constantly having rocks thrown at me and things like that growing up, running around in the yard. And so I did, when I, you know, got into organized sports, I honestly, in retrospect, I think I carried that mentality all the way through my athletic career. Okay, who was a little bit faster than me? Who was a little bit better than me? And that did help me to excel. Because I had assumptions, like most people do, about what it takes to excel in sports, I didn't think. I just thought, well, I'm shorter than most college basketball players. I'm slow. I got the Turtle Award because I was the slowest runner on my field hockey team in middle school. You know, so because of these small things, they kind of chipped away at my confidence. So I was like, oh, I can play sports. I'm good here. I'm good in my small school, in my small town. So that was the level that I thought, you know, and of course, coaches tell you have potential, and that's becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes pressure, or it just becomes, no matter how fast or how strong or how technically savvy you become, you still are thinking like, oh, I'm still not that good yet.
Well, clearly you were good. You know, I met a guy named, the name probably rings a bell, Mike Evans. Him and his brother were on the Canadian team. They earned gold medals in rowing. And I said, how hard was it? He said, easy. I said, what do you mean? He said, it was just 7 years of training, 7 days a week, 7 hours a day.
I mean, basically in a nutshell.
Was that it? I mean, was it that hard? Like, you guys were just full on for all those years?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of joke about it. I had a friend who came to visit one time. She said, they treat 36 hours off like it's a summer vacation. You know, I mean, you know, because we, whenever you're not actually physically training, you're doing something that is related to your training. So it's how you're sleeping, you know, are you going to physical therapy? Sundays were usually a day off, if not some sort of recommended day of training, where some teammates and I would usually go for a walk around the lake where we rode, and even just making sure that, or jog, you know, and if we didn't feel like jogging, we would literally grab a tea and go for a walk, because that helped Monday not be so difficult. If you took the whole day, Monday felt like you got hit by a Mack truck over the weekend, you know. And one thing I will say is that it's been also really nice to be able to look back at my training logs, because a lot of young athletes and young coaches are looking at what the elite athletes are doing and immediately doing that. My first day of practice with the U.S. national team was, we cleaned the boathouse. Our coach gave us the equipment that we would be allowed to use. Notice I say that we were allowed to use. He taught us how to carry it, wash it, fix it if we broke it. It was on us. You know, if we broke our boat, then we didn't get to row, you know, and then we rowed for 20 minutes. And he was there sweating with us, moving stuff around with us, because we didn't start with 7-hour days or 6-hour days. We started with a 20-minute row and accountability, you know, and that built these, planted these tiny seeds of trust of, but among the 7 of us that were there, because it was only 7 athletes in the beginning, and our 1, and then ultimately a couple of weeks later, 2 coaches, you know. So it was this tiny little group built out of a foundation of the connection among those of us who were there. Because if we weren't first connected and we didn't first build like an identity and we weren't accountable for not only our stuff, but one another, and enjoy one another's company, then all of the rest of it would not have been nearly as powerful, and we would not have been nearly as successful.
Same coach through the whole journey?
Yeah. And he's still there. He is still the head coach of the women's national team. Let's see, he took over in right about 2002. So my first Olympic cycle was his first full Olympic cycle as the head coach. So it was almost like we were the guinea pigs, you know, the experiments along the way. But it worked out really well. You know, we developed this camaraderie, this rapport, that we played practical jokes on one another. We played pranks on our coach, you know, because when you're training so much, and when I say so much, you know, on a day off, we were supposed to have a day off, and this was in the Olympic year, so after several years of training at this point, and we're all excited, we're thinking, we're training in San Diego, you know, basically Southern California, south of San Diego at this point, and so we're thinking, maybe we'll go for a jog down at Mission Beach on Sunday. What are you gonna do? Maybe we'll go for a hike, it's so beautiful. A couple days go by, and the language changes from, yeah, this day off that you'll have, just go out and do 24 kilometers on the rowing machine, put the machine in the sun. That's about 2 hours. Go as slowly as you want, you know. And so that's what a day off kind of became over this long period of time. But throughout that whole time, I was always told that I needed, how do you improve? Get stronger, keep getting stronger, and keep working on your technique.
Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. We'll be right back to the interview. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about them. This has been a tough year for a lot of people, and mental health is finally something that people are talking about. So many people are struggling right now. Therapy can help. Sometimes the bravest thing to do is to do the hard thing, which is asking for help. BetterHelp says therapy helps. So what is therapy? Well, BetterHelp says it's whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be sitting around talking about your feelings. With BetterHelp, you can talk to someone privately if you're just not feeling right, or you're having trouble dealing with stress or issues with your relationships. Whatever you need, you don't need to be ashamed of normal human struggles. You can feel better. Spartans, you deserve to be happy. And with BetterHelp, it's a little bit easier. You don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you. You can get help from home. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't even have to see someone on camera if you don't want to. Times are tight financially too, but the good news is that BetterHelp is more affordable than in-person therapy. And you can get going really quickly. You can be communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. So join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really about. What's the greatest investment you can make? Investing in yourself. Because you are your greatest asset. Make that asset function even better. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And you, Spartan Up listeners, get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/Spartan. That's better. HELP.com/Spartan.
How do you improve? Get stronger, keep getting stronger, and keep working on your technique. So I always felt like I was never strong enough. And when I say never strong enough, to go back to the, what does that 7 hours look like, is I would have an extra hour of lifting in the weight room. You know, there were three of us that had this, and everybody else would come and go, and we're still in there just chipping away at lifting weights. And, you know, you spend 2 or 3 hours doing one thing, you take a 45-minute break, you spend another hour or so doing something else, you go to work, and then you come back and do another hour or two in the afternoon, and then you go home and crash onto the couch, have dinner, pass out cold, and do it all over again the next day.
That's some serious commitment. Did you question it along the way, like a college student questions, you know, Maybe I don't want to finish college. Did you want to tap out even though you were doing so well?
For me, whenever it felt like something wasn't going well and I wasn't progressing necessarily, it felt like my heart was breaking. I knew more than anything that that was what I wanted to do, because even through the ups and downs, it was making me better at being me. You know, the sport was this outlet, this manifestation of me able to demonstrate just being the best, being great at this thing. And I didn't know at the time, you know, it was so new to me and so fresh that everything, I was absorbing everything that was told to me, you know, like a sponge. And so the thought of what I would do beyond that, I had no idea. You know, I had already spent time away from athletics, and I knew that being a part of a team and being able to be physically fit and having some semblance of structure and schedule where you're building something with other people, you know, was what was really important to me. It's always been that team element that has really drawn me into sports. You know, my mom always said I'd be great at the piano, but it would have to be a duet. I would never be able to do it by myself. But you question, when you know why you're doing what you're doing, that for me, I knew that it mattered that much to me. Even when your hands are bleeding because it's that cold. I know you're up in Boston, you know how you get the cracks in the winter and everything on your hands is just bleeding, not because of blisters, but because the cold is doing that to you. You know, there were days when ice developed on my back and on my equipment because it was that cold and you got that wet because the weather was just that bad. Even on those days, because of how important it was to me, that importance superseded that, like, oh, this is really terrible, you know? So that, especially now as a coach, that's one of the biggest things that I love to help people discover is, like, how much does it matter to you? Because the farther you want to take this, it's going to be really hard, and you have to address that and get over it. Like, this is not going to be easy. So if you want to go that far, recognize that early on, and that helps, you know.
There's that rap preacher Eric Thomas who tells a great story on the web of a kid who wants to make money, and he brings the kid out into the ocean and dunks the kid underwater and holds him underwater, and the kid's just thinking, he's drowning me, all I want to do is make money, what the hell are we doing? He comes up and gasps for air and he says, when you want to make money as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll make money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So You clearly wanted this so badly that you get it done. Because I tell everybody, I wrote a book actually on this, which is, no matter, you know, anything worth doing, you're going to go into the valley of death.
Yeah.
Relationship, school, whatever it is that's really worth doing, you're going to get to a place. Like the most exciting moment, what probably was the day you met the coach after writing in your journal that you were not happy where you were. Yeah. That was the best day ever. And then from there, it was all downhill. Right? Like, it sucked after all.
You know, I mean, another eerily serendipitous moment. That coach, my college coach, his birthday is the same as my mom. Same day, same year. You know, I send him a thank you card. Not a birthday card. I send him a thank you card every year on his birthday. It only took about 20 years of birthdays for him to say, you know, I'm not that much of a card person. You know, he finally mustered the courage to tell me that. But yeah, I track everything because that was that major turning point. So I track everything back to that moment, you know, and that really does steer the notion that opportunity is really all around us. And that also can be kind of a double-edged sword. It's like, well, which one do I pick? Well, each route might be equally as viable, but you know, you're saying, when you want this as much as you want literally to live, then you're willing to pour more into it. I always say the more that you want out of something, the more that it's meaningful to you, the more resources you are going to be willing to put into it. And so that's why you can only do one, maybe two things really, really well, because you need as many resources as you can possibly get your hands on out of yourself and out of everything around you to be really great at that thing.
I couldn't agree more. Let's look at the average Joe, mm-hmm. right? The average person out there that is stuck, and maybe doesn't get as lucky as you did to meet that coach. Yeah. How do they get started? What do they do? What do you recommend?
You know, I mean, it goes back to that meaning thing. You know, I mean, it didn't necessarily need to be the coach. You know, I had other people in my life. I had other scenarios in my life, other things in my life. And it does kind of take that bottom moment. You know, my brother, for instance, he had gained like 100 pounds or something like that when we were in college. And he got to a point where he was like, oh, this is not who I want to be. And for him, it took his kids. You know, I asked him many years later, I said, what really did it for you? He said, I wanted to be Superman for my kids in whatever way that I possibly could. So he just started reading there and maybe that's, I know that that's a big reason of why I was willing to put into it so much, was that I did have that kind of, oh, this is not the person I want to be. And whatever it is, start with wherever you are. I think maybe that's why I say recognizing even, okay, I know what I don't want to do. And if you're totally lost, give something a shot until you figure out that you're like, okay, that's not what I want to be doing. Let's maybe turn the needle 1 degree this direction and maybe do it this way. And then you can start checking off what's really important. Do I need people? Am I materialistic? Do I need stuff? You know, how comfortable do I need to live? For me, people always look at me and they're like, well, you live so healthily. And I'm like, this is because it's my priority. You know, I went through overtraining my second Olympic cycle because I didn't know enough. So I got depressed. I got the whole thing that we kind of are starting to see hints of with athletes. I'm at that point in life again. So I went, this is my basement and ceiling of life. This is what I know, how much time I need for myself and what that'll take. And so I restructured my entire life around that, because the same cascade of emotions and things that I met when I was overtraining in rowing started to happen from grad school and full-time job, you know, full-time job, grad school on top of that, all the things that came with that. And I went, oh, this is not the life that I want to be living. What do I need to do to adjust that? And just started picking at little ways to build time back into my life, which ultimately builds health back into my life.
Yeah. So post-Olympics, is there like a post-Olympic blues or like what happens after the Olympics? I understand you wrote a book.
After the games, I went back, and this is a really fun piece of the story. And the reason I wrote the first book was so that I can write the second book and have it kind of make sense. Is that I went back for another Olympic cycle. I knew more than anything. My coach asked me before we even won the Olympics, what are you planning on doing? I said, I'm coming back absolutely 100%. I want to do this for as long as I can. And then I, you know, went back, made the team again. We won the world championships again. And when we crossed the finish line, it was anticlimactic. It was very much like, whoa, that didn't taste the same. That didn't feel the same. What happened? And there were little hints from other veteran athletes that said that you need to kind of expect that. It's never going to be the same. Give it time. You know, even from day one, year one, coaches said this stuff. And what happened for me, now that I've, you know, dug back into the exercise physiology of this and then dissected it again through writing the stories, is that I didn't know enough about physical health. I completely forgot, oh, right, it took this long to get that fit and that focused and that talented and that, you know, technically savvy. And I shouldn't say talented, I should say technically savvy, because you improve through the steps that you take. And I took time off, gained about 25 pounds by Thanksgiving and thought, oh, I'm going back, I'll lose it, no big deal. What does that lead to? I got hurt. You know, I got hurt for the first time in 7.5 years. I'd never been hurt before, never majorly. And so all of a sudden, this thing that I loved was hurting me for the first time in my life. And that hit me in the face like a ton of bricks. And I started to question. I said, well, this made me better every day. And that's why I always did it. It wasn't about the medals. It was about being better every day. And if it's breaking me now, what do I do? I got depressed. My brother enlightened me to that fact. I ended up with 2 MRIs within a year. Doctors told me I had stress fractures on my vertebrae surrounding a couple of bulging discs. I said I would never run again. I would never lift weights again. 4 months later, I had retired from rowing and I ran a half marathon dressed as a purple octopus, you know, because I took it one step at a time after I retired. But there is that moment of now what? And it took me several years to get over it. I would say probably I started coaching, which helped. But it took me 6 full years to really understand that I had found something, my next outlet to be the best that I could be, to enjoy my health and be the person that I could be. The first book is called Better Great Than Never. And this, which tells the story of how I got into sport, how I got into rowing, and then ultimately went on to win the games with my teammates and I, or my teammates. And then the second book would be the telling of what happens after that, you know, exactly kind of the build out of everything that I just told you of, I've been an athlete for this long and it's been who I am. It's part of my identity. What outlet is going to allow me to pursue being the best me after that? The reason I wrote the first book, why I had to get it out now, is because over the last 10 years of coaching, I've had athletes come up to me over time and I'll just drop little things, just do the things that I do as a coach and as a person. And they remember them. Athlete people remember every word you say. And so it's made me very mindful of like, okay, nothing flippant. People remember, and it could be set them on a perfect, on a great path, and it could send them on a negative path. But I had an athlete come up to me and say, but Lindsay, you can do that because you're you. And I thought, holy cow, we have so much in common. I was, you know, we were so similar at one point in time. And it was this, you know, stepwise process that got me there. It wasn't because of talent. It wasn't because I was the biggest or the strongest. It was because I decided to pursue that, to experiment with becoming a little bit better. And I wanted the story to be available so that people could literally see it and be like, oh, she's a normal person. And then she did this thing. Okay, maybe I can do that too. Cool feedback so far is that people are getting that sense out of the book, which is amazing. So I'm really proud of that fact.
It's basically inspiring people and giving people confidence.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The preparation equals confidence. Yeah, that insecure, I was insecure and overweight and, you know, turned it all around. And directly proportionate. Whenever I have a big presentation or something that I'm going to do, I make sure that I eat well, hydrate, sleep. I take care of myself physically because I know that that's going to allow my brain to perform properly. I usually stand when I give presentations, even though they're from home right now. And, you know, people notice that I'm standing, and I just like the way that it kind of keeps me energized throughout. So even those very small habits that I learned through many years of rowing at the highest level, I do today. You know, I know that if I eat late or eat something super sugary or tons of dairy or drink a beer or something like that, my voice is going to be messed up. My eyes are going to be puffy the next day. Being able to recognize those things, you know, really helped me in life today.
How can people find the book?
Amazon is the easiest way. You can also find it through my website, lindsaydareshoop.com. And I've had even close friends say to me, your middle name is actually Dare. Is that true? Yes, that's actually my middle name, which is kind of on point. But Amazon is the easiest way. Better Great Than Never is the title.
Give as we wrap up here, give the person listening, the man or woman that wants to live like an Olympian. Maybe they're not going to actually get a gold medal at the Olympics, but they're going to live like an Olympian. How do they eat? You know, what time should they wake up? Very simple life in the day. Of Dare.
Yeah. You might laugh. I love sleeping. You know, sleep is like the biggest commodity in my life, you know, and it's so much more simple than we want to make it. You know, we want it to be some complex, you know, thing, but it really is sleep as much as you can. Go to bed earlier because your wake time is harder to change than your bedtime. So go to bed a little bit earlier each day. Make sure that you're hydrating. I keep water by my bed. And the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is drink a glass of water. And every time I eat something, I drink water. I eat as close to as nature intended as possible. a ton of fruits and vegetables, nuts, beans, seeds. I've never, ever in my entire life been a huge meat eater. I rarely ate meat through my entire Olympic cycle. To be honest, I ate a lot of colors so my body could repair itself. And prehab and rehab. Even if you aren't exercising, stretch around a little bit. Get up if you're sitting and move. And those are my daily habits that make such a difference in my mood, my creativity. I don't have back problems after having a couple of MRIs, bulging discs and stress fractures, you know, and repeat. I definitely get outside, even if it's cold. And it's relative because I'm in Miami. So, you know, but I can give you more detail if you want them. But I mean, that's where I start, you know. And for people that, I was going to say, for people that don't like vegetables necessarily, your palate, your cells on your tongue change within a week or two. So just give it time. It doesn't have to be all at once. Make it your manageable chunk and then take another step after that.
Awesome. You're awesome. Thanks for coming
Thank
on.
Thank you.
Thanks for earning some gold for America.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics, to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful? Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time. Today's episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by BetterHelp. Spartan Up listeners can save 10% on their first month by going to betterhelp.com/spartan.